This podcast is for general information only. It is not intended as a substitute for general healthcare services. If you have medical conditions, you need to see your doctor. Use of this information is at the user's own risk. Welcome to FitRx with Dr. Greg Dennis. Join me as we challenge the standard sick model of healthcare. This is your source for everything health, wellness, prevention, fitness, biohacking, and more. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of FitRx. I'm your host, Dr. Greg Dennis. And you know, one of the things I like about hosting this podcast is I get to interact with some really smart people, way smarter than me, and I get to learn from them. And hopefully you guys get to learn from them. And my next guest is no exception, Dr. Florence Comite, MD. She is a Yale graduate and endocrinologist. She was a faculty member there for many years. She has published original research in numerous clinical journals. She is the author of a book called Keep It Up, The Power of Precision Medicine to Conquer Low T and Revitalize Your Life. She is an innovator in the field of precision medicine, which we will be talking about. And she is the founder of the Center for Precision Medicine and Health in New York City, which I believe is where she's still at today. And she also is on the board of the Age Management Medicine Group, which I am a part of. It's where I got my training in kind of anti-aging medicine. And so anyway, just excited to just kind of pick her brain a little bit and learn more about precision medicine and other things. And so, Dr. Comite, I just really appreciate you joining us and welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I guess my first question is, I've talked a little bit about precision medicine on here, but for those that don't know what that is, kind of explain a little bit about what precision medicine is.
Great question. What we do in precision medicine really is about medicine, and it's about looking at the whole human being as a system and collecting data that we marry, if you will, to a unique person's health story. So every one of us lives life our own way, even if we're identical twins, and I am an identical twin. So I knew that genetics was not the only factor, but it was a major factor for me, and I was interested in it. So I took the idea of applying data in what we do to understand what's going on in people below the surface at the cellular level. Because we all know, you know, I'm sure from your training and background as a board certified physician in family medicine, that changes happen over a long period of time. We don't wake up one day and find out overnight we're a diabetic, because that's been brewing under the surface, but we don't really understand it or know it. And generally, it's not picked up until we have overt symptoms. So to my way of thinking, if we saw and detected those changes 10, 20, 30 years before somebody became an overt diabetic, they were either a pre-diabetic or they had other signs that they might be, why not intervene at that moment in time and get them on a track to keep them healthy for life? And that's where it started for me.
So talk about that, if you will. So, you know, you're a Yale-trained physician, you were in academia, you know, in what I would call the, quote, conventional medicine circles, a lot of times, you know, they tend to kind of frown upon anything else. if it's not the, quote, you know, traditional way. And so how did you first just kind of discover this? And then when you started kind of looking more into this style of medicine, you know, how did your peers react? And just talk about that kind of evolution for you, and then how you maybe made that transition from, you know, quote, conventional medicine into more, you know, precision type medicine.
Great. So it's kind of funny because it brings me back to more than 20 years ago. And the good news part of it is that I was always a serious clinical research scientist. I trained at Yale, then I went to NIH in the National Institute of Child Health and Human Development, where I did work initially in my career in pediatric growth and development, then in women's health and men's health, looked at reproductive endocrine, adult endocrine, pediatric endocrine. So I'm clearly an overachiever, not unlike yourself, getting additional training after your training, right? And then figured out at a journal club, no less, because I was in three departments at Yale full-time, adult internal medicine, endocrine, pediatric endocrine, and gynecology, which kind of subsumes andrology, which is a study of hormones for men, as you know. But maybe your listeners might find it unfamiliar. And then I gave a journal club. And the journal club, everybody met together an hour a week. I picked the topic of why do we all begin to deteriorate in our 30s? How come it looks like we can't sometimes keep it up? Our energy is flagging. Women put on weight heading towards 40. Men can get heart attacks in their 30s. We women start a little bit later, usually 10 years later. The reverse is true of bone. And I began to realize that hormonally we're shifting in our 30s. And as a result, it is harder to get pregnant. It is harder to keep muscle, and we tend to put on fat. The heart suffers. There's all sorts of changes that are going on in our 30s because clearly we're optimal into our 20s. There's a lot of data on that in athletes, getting pregnant. 27 seems to be this magic number. And again, that would be generalizing. And after speaking about it at Yale and getting laughed at, just like you said, like, what are you talking about? I had the audacity to even say, and by the way, each of us is different, yet the standard of care that we apply in conventional medicine is one size fits all. And genetics was beginning to emerge. And I love genetics. As I said, as an identical twin, it's natural. But I even knew at that time that my twin sister and I, which is true of all of us when we just look at ourselves, we don't express genes in exactly the same way. And whereas I love sushi and sashimi, she won't touch it. She's a phenomenal gardener, and I can't, you know, raise a plant to save my life. And there's a lot of other differences. And even in each of us, if you draw a line down your face, the right side of your face doesn't match the left. So plastic surgeons are known to say you can have three kinds of faces: the one you have, one that matches your right, one that matches your left. And so I began to collect the data, and I began to share that knowledge with my peers and colleagues. But even within the last few years, people are skeptical. And that's the reason I designed what I did prospectively beginning 15, 20 years ago, knowing I would fully want to publish it retrospectively. And so I started publishing in this field in 2013. And now the field has grown up around us, you know, longevity research, looking at what keeps you living longer, whether it's David Sinclair, Peter Attia, or Andrew Huberman. They speak about this all the time. The difference is that we actually have the data to show that we can intervene and keep people healthy. And that, to me, is the goal. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. How long ago did you kind of jump ship, I guess, from like academia and what you were doing and to kind of start what you're doing now, you know, full time? How long ago was that?
I didn't jump ship too quickly because I had women's health that I had set up in at Yale. And then I started transitioning actually in about 2020, a little earlier. I was bi-coastal and I set up what I was doing in Ojai Valley Inn and Spa because I wanted to understand the alternative universe of aromatherapy, Qigong, Tai Chi, meditation, and how that impacted our health, acupuncture. And as a result, I was bi-coastal for a while. I was full-time at Yale and I set up this practice within a spa resort. It was hugely successful. But unfortunately, a couple of years into it, the spa owners, the Crown family, decided to regroup, shut down originally for 6 months, and then it was for 2 years. And I decided I needed to think through how I was going to bring this to everyone. So I I was still at Yale full time. And so I decided to develop what I was doing and put it in New York City. And I, for about 5 years or more, I was continued to be at Yale full time. It got harder and harder, but I continued to grow in my own way of thinking and collecting. Another piece that was elemental kind of to the system was N of one, meaning I wanted to understand fully what makes you, you, and me, me, and me even different than my identical twin. And so the work that I do is based on understanding that all of us are unique. Each one of us has a unique path. It's made up of numbers of what's going on at the cellular level. It's made up of the choices we make about sleep, exercise, food, not in that order, sleep, food, exercise, actually, or restorative practices like meditation, which can turn off the gene that makes cortisol and reduce your risk of high blood pressure, calm you down, you know, all of that good stuff. And so I started developing the model here in New York beginning in 2005 and growing the bricks and mortar. But the additional twist, because I can never keep things simple, which I should, but the additional twist was I decided rather than really roll out lots of centers, which is what I had originally thought about, I really wanted to bring this to the masses. And at that moment in time, in 20 years ago, it was a little bit more now, it was bricks and clicks. And what I want to do now is what's digital health. So I began to work towards creating a company that would allow virtual medicine access to the work we do. And that's what we're underway doing. So there's been a lot of development, which, in, you know, responding to the interests. And the good news, it's all moved in my direction. And so this data that I'm sitting on is very, very valuable. And we can actually extrapolate from that data and do work in artificial intelligence, what we call now generative AI. I don't know if you're familiar, ChatGPT, and but we have a unique body of data that's really not out there. And that's what I'm developing to share it with everyone, because I think we all deserve to own our health for the future. And with this kind of wisdom, feeding off of what each person is all about, there's a way to do that successfully.
Is that where you think kind of traditional medicine misses the mark the most? And I feel like they do it on probably a lot of different levels, but do you think that they just have this general, you know, kind of generalization that they try to put everybody into a box rather than, as you mentioned, looking at everybody, you know, as individuals, and we're all different? Do you feel like that's kind of the main area that they just miss the mark in?
I think that in some ways, absolutely. It's really what I think of it as standard of care, because multi-center trials are done with thousands to even a million or more participants. And if you find something works, you apply it to everybody. And to me, that's a one size fits all, as opposed to what do people really need and why, and how do they, the choices they make to live life, how can we intervene there to keep people healthy in their future trajectory? How do we make sure they don't become diabetic, they don't have a heart attack, they don't necessarily suffer with age, which is a real huge problem in this country and costs us about $4 trillion. So there's an economic component to this as well. Yes. So I believe that what I'm doing is not waiting for disease to strike, but rather stopping it in its progress and reversing it, and reversing biological aging, which I never dreamed was possible, but I see in my own clients, call them clients because I don't want them to be sick patients, that you can actually do that. It takes 2-3 years to slow down that progress and sort of divide biological aging from chronological aging. But I do think it's possible. And I think applying it in a way where each of us is what I think of as an N of one is where medicine is headed. Yeah.
So on that note, again, I mentioned that you're associated with the Age Management Medical Group and on the board there. I know, again, you specifically, you know, individualize everyone, but if you could give us some general tips of, you said, you know, you feel like it's possible to reverse our age. What are just some universals that you know, that you would say are the, you know, could benefit everyone, that, you know, would, it would work for everyone to possibly reverse our age?
So first of all, I think we have to take charge of how we're living life. I don't mean radically initially, but the more knowledge you have about how your system functions, one great sort of insight is that the continuous glucose monitor, we use it at almost everyone, and it helps people define, if you're familiar with it, what your sugar is at any particular time of day after you eat a banana versus a cookie or a meal, or you go out, you know, for pizza and French fries, none of which, you know, is bad for you, but you need to understand what's good, how you should eat, and then apply it. So I'm not a big believer in assigning everybody to fasting or keto or paleo. I think some of that is actually bad for some people. I can fast, but I have patients who would pass out if they had to fast more than 3 hours. And but because we all are programmed differently. So getting a CGM, getting certain blood markers, biomarkers, learning about your family to the extent you have one, because we even can see these changes at the level of biomarkers in the blood, even if you're adopted, it's really crystal clear to us. To me now, it feels like I have a crystal ball. And as long as I get that data and people can start to look at it for themselves, that is a way of owning what your health is doing and what are the kinds of interventions that could be done. And I can even give you specific examples of profiles and how they vary amongst each other from just the work we've been doing at the center and also in Grok Health, which is the app that we're building and actually we've released already, but working predominantly through companies and their employees. So I'm happy to talk about a few examples if you'd like.
Sure. Greg. Yeah, no, that'd be great. Yeah, go ahead.
So one clear-cut group of folks are young men and women. There can be women too. It's more commonly seen in men that have a early death in their family from heart disease, heart attack, or stroke, meaning that a father, a mother, grandparent, or both, aunts and uncles, could have had a heart attack in their 30s or 40s, and they're gone in their 60s. And when you look at their biomarkers under the surface, you can see that their biomarkers look like they're much older than they should, or they're beginning to notice that they don't have the same energy. Their sexual function is declining. And also they put on weight around the middle and they can't, even if they do the exact same things they did in their 20s, they can't sustain themselves. Like most of us can burn the candle at both ends in our 20s and get away with it. By the time you hit the 30s, most of us can't. But in most of the folks that we talk to who are in this category, they recognize that they just can't keep it up in a way. They're slowing down and they don't know why. It's beyond just having a family working hard. It's they're still working out. They're still trying to eat right, but they're unable to keep up the traction. And they look it below the surface. Or there's the typical perimenopausal woman whose body is shifting. And that kind of picture is another profile that's useful because hormones are starting to change in the late 30s and then declining even further in the 40s. As women enter perimenopause, their cycles can start shifting. They don't feel good. They got used to predicting PMS, you know, and when it hit them and how to accommodate it. And now it's PMS meets perimenopause. And that's another profile that that is so recognizable. Again, women can all look very different. When I'm stopped at AMG and I'm asked, because men can be a little more similar, the trajectory for men follows a certain path every decade of life. And men can even father children into their 80s or 90s. Women can't. We hit a wall with menopause and that's it. Our ovaries do not perform in the same way. In men, it's a little different. It's the combination and the negative feedback loop between the head and the testicles, or the hypothalamus and pituitary and the testicles. And even though circulating testosterone is falling in the 30s, which it does in all of us by 1% to 3% a year, they don't mount a response to that as you might in your 20s. In your 20s, if testosterone seems a little low, your body ramps it up and says, hey, let's make more from the hypothalamus to the pituitary to the testes. But as soon as you hit your 30s, it's not going to happen. So your testosterone can be low, but your brain doesn't pay attention to it. We don't know why, but I published some information on that back in 2013 at the Endocrine Society. And it was fascinating that it wasn't the fact that the testes couldn't perform. That's what happens in women. We run out of eggs and that's it. The ovaries can't make any more eggs. But in men, their testes are possible. It's possible to stimulate them with like HCG, a peptide we use frequently. And you can go on making testosterone for years. So what exactly escapes us is why that relationship starts to fail. So all of those are patterns that we've grown to recognize pretty much from the get-go when I talk to a human being who wants to come to the center. And that's what's proving very useful when we want to create a virtual platform for this.
Okay. So you touched on a couple of things there. I want to ask about it, specifically about men. And you wrote a book. I can see it in the background there. Keep it up. And I do a lot of men's health myself. And I remember you saying that you use a lot of HCG, which I was just kind of starting to do. And then, they quit compounding it, at least around here. I don't know if that was a nationwide thing or not, but and now just the branded, HCG is a little bit more expensive. And but anyways, I guess we could, I'm sure, have a whole episode on just your book. But if you will give us a quick synopsis of your book and just kind of what some of your general recommendations are on men's health and, how we fight that andropause or, that lowering testosterone and kind of what's your approach on all that?
Okay, that's great. So I'm going to start where you asked me about how did conventional medicine people take this? Well, for one, a lot of conventional medicine docs don't believe in andropause. They don't think men age. They think basically menopause is a woman's, prerogative, and men do just great. But we look around, and of course you can see men hunched over walkers because they get osteoporosis or they get heart attacks, right? Strokes. No different than us women. And in fact, they catch up with osteoporosis. They start 10 years later than us. The flip is true for heart disease. And ultimately, 25% of us have broken bones, broken hip. We start shrinking, hunched over. So when I started this work, I knew that I had to prove the model. And in the end, our data shows that in the men that we treat, 97% of them lost visceral fat, 92% grew muscle, built muscle, which is critical for aging because it protects us against a lot of diseases. 81% report deeper sleep and 80% more energy, higher sex drive, increased endurance. Similar values, but somewhat different in women. And so one of the first places we start is to say, how do you feel? Like, what's going on in your life now at 40 or 50? Do you feel like you're 25 still? Some men will say, oh yeah, my sex life is just as good. And then we start treating them and they circle back and they say, I now know what it really feels like to be 18 again. Can you dial it back a little bit? So because change is inevitable and accepting it is stage number one, and then being able to be honest and want to face the truth about each of us ourselves, how do we really eat? Is sleep really quality? What about exercise? Are we really getting in the gym, or working out or running? Are we doing a combination of resistance and aerobic? Are we trying for the high intensity interval training? All of that is important as we enter each decade of life to keep our health. But we couldn't do it without supporting the cellular level and metabolic level. And that's where things go south for everyone, because aging happens. We have to accept that. We don't have to accept it lying down, though. We should accept it, doing the best we can to do resistance training so we put on muscle. Talk to our doctor about getting certain measurements of our blood work, like a free testosterone, taking a look at carbohydrate metabolism, like a hemoglobin A1C, which looks at an average of 100 days of sugar in our body. Also, insulin. Those are all predictors of your future health trajectory. And if you did that, there are changes that can be made. So along with what the continuous glucose monitor, owning what's going on in your body and capturing that information, talking to your family. In fact, at the back of my book, there's a little bit of a kind of secret chapter that ends the book saying you can get online and start collecting some of this information. Getting online was the beginning of my way of thinking about offering Grok Health to the masses, because it's a way of do it yourself, but with guidance. So people can sign on, become those kinds of users, and ultimately turn around their health. And what's really been quite fascinating is we've talked to a lot of sophisticated people because their companies have become clients of ours in a B2B2C, because they want to offer it to their employees. And a lot of the senior management executives have been our patients at Comite. And none of them have heard anything that we've explained to them about themselves. So we are able to point out what the numbers mean, how they're living life, and what they should take charge of. And that's in the book. It starts you off pretty well in the book. There's some stories, all of which are true, and there's data that you can actually bring to your doctor. Because I wrote that book 10 years ago. It was actually Jeff, who was my editor. So it's kind of funny because we work together now very closely. And he was instrumental in making sure it turned out fine. But the stories are in there as well as the data. So it works for people who are humanistic and kind of want to read more about stories. And then it works for those engineers who would say to me, why do you clutter it up with story? We want more data. And so it did fairly well. In fact, a lot of people come see me because of the book or, you know, referrals from other clients of ours.
Talk a little bit, if you will, about HCG, because I feel like that you maybe utilize that more than some, you know, that do just kind of traditional, you know, TRT. Is that something that you still use a lot of?
Yeah, I'm fortunate enough to have relationships with compounding pharmacies that are able to do it in a responsible way, because if there's shortages, you're allowed to get it, but they have to be on an approved list. Even in Oklahoma, I don't know if you still see patients. You still see?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, great. So you can get it. What I love about HCG is it's not a steroid hormone. It's a peptide. And it keeps a male system going on its own. So they're making their own testosterone as opposed to giving testosterone and shutting down their testes, which isn't always to the liking of men, because their testes can shrink, particularly if they're capable of making testosterone. If you shut them down, the lytic cells go to sleep and they shrink and they atrophy. Some men don't enjoy that part of it. Yeah. HCG is a peptide that resembles LH and luteinizing hormone, which men and women both make. And in men, it comes from the pituitary gland, which is considered the middle eye in Eastern medicine. But the real controlling factor is the hypothalamus, the arcuate nucleus of the hypothalamus, which tells the pituitary gland what to do. And then there's this negative feedback loop, as I alluded to before. If testosterone falls, LH should go up and tell the testes, hey, make more testosterone. But that doesn't happen as men age. It doesn't happen in an adequate way. So their testosterone drops, and instead of having an optimal testosterone of 180 to 250, most men are below 100, sometimes even below 50. I just saw a 40-year young male who's turning 41 in September. Just visually, he needs interventions for sure. He has no idea. He's gone. The last doctor we went to was a couple of years ago, and he's too busy to focus on it. He doesn't know his family history too well. And he has a free testosterone of 40. That is very low. And some of it's contributed to by too much fat, because it sequesters testosterone, as you know. But it's the free testosterone that's needs to act. So we use HCG twice a week as a tiny injection. We start with a high dose, but then we scale it back depending on, because I want to jumpstart people. And it gives them the ability to jumpstart and to feel better. And as soon as that happens, they start to see changes. They see changes in putting on muscle. They lose visceral fat. They have more energy, sexual function returns. But again, every male presents uniquely. So just because one male has hot flashes, and they do occur in men when their T falls low because it's an instability of the neuroendocrine system, doesn't mean another male will have it. Or just because one man has difficulty with libido, another man may have difficulty in getting spontaneous erections or maintaining an erection. And that's all important because the heart's affected, the brain is affected. Testosterone's key for you know, functioning heart, which is a muscle. I've had men with early heart attacks where we've doubled their ejection fraction of their heart so that they have better circulation and they're perfusing their brain and body and feel better just by increasing their free testosterone. So that's where we start. Now, as men enter succeeding decades of life, there's a fallout about 50% every decade, meaning it starts with very few men who can't respond to HCG in their 40s. But as they hit 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, even 90s, there's fallout every decade. And then you need to start cycling with testosterone. And it's not like testosterone's bad. It's absolutely great. And there's lots of different ways to use it. But it's not as good to me as keeping the testes alive and well, because there's actually data that shows women who get pregnant later in life or men who can conceive a child with a woman later in life actually live longer. So there's a biological component to having functional testes.
Do you do a lot of combination of TRT with HCG?
So that's the cycling, but I don't even call it, for 20 more years now, I've coined the term hormonal optimization. I don't think of myself as Mother Nature, right? And I don't think we can recreate a woman's menstrual cycle and get her hormones to mimic. We can, it would be a lot of work. And so what we try to do is aim for looking at each woman and male as the risk benefit. What do you do to optimize them, whether it's hormonally, metabolically, or every way possible, lifestyle, and get them tracking in a way that gives them the best of this intervention, as I think of it, optimization, and no downside and the least risk. And so I look at it the way I do in research, where you can minimize risk and get a benefit, because everything we do to any particular human being comes with risks and benefits. You've probably been reading like I about how aspirin is now bad for us. Mm-hmm. It's not bad for us. If you select the population, which is the majority of us, you won't see excessive bleeding or anemia. That's because there's other factors going on in the background that's leading to that. And so if you weigh what's going on in a particular individual and you look at these precise factors, the biomarkers, the way people choose to live life, their family history, all of that adds up to what makes that person as healthy as possible. How do we give that person a health span that will last a lifetime, even till 120 or 150? And then we go to sleep after having a wonderful night, maybe dancing at our great, great granddaughter's wedding, and our cells are tired and we just don't wake up the next morning. But until then, we live life to the fullest. So yes, we cycle with testosterone when a male has shown that his responsiveness to HCG is declining.
Okay. One last question on that. I hate to spend, you know, so much time on this, but I do a lot of men's health, so it just interests me. So I kind of want to pick your brain about it. But do you have success with men who have been on testosterone for a while and then converting them over to HCG and, you know, reviving those testicles? And is there ever a point where they've been on testosterone for so long that you're just going to have difficulty reviving those testicles?
That's a great question, because I see kids from the age of 10 to, I have somebody in his 90s now who was a client and then came back after COVID, and he's doing fabulously, actually. And what happens is it's a complex answer and question, actually. So the answer is, with one exception, I've been very successful. And the one exception was in a young man who started, was given testosterone in puberty by his coach, either wrestling or something of that nature. And despite doing everything possible to bring his testes back, it just didn't work. And he was 30. Sure. On the other hand, I also have a chiropractor who's been a longstanding client, and he had been on a combination of medications, including testosterone, for a long time, and very intensive course of HCG over a period of 4 to 6 months, which is unusual. We revised his testes. We revitalized his testes, let's say that. We didn't revise them, we revitalized them. And as a result, he stayed on HCG for a number of years. I've also had clients, I have the guy who's the head of a clan out in California, and we see a lot of people, of a lot of the relatives and friends, who who wasn't responding to HCG in his 40s. There was a lot of stress in his life. He was building a huge business and from another country, and he was traveling a lot. But there were a lot of factors that really stressed him. And so for 2 years, he stopped responding to HCG. And I've seen this before. And after 2 years, we started challenging him again. Life settled down a little bit. And he's done fabulously on HCG since then. And it's been years. So we started on HCG. He had a great response. All of a sudden, you know, the bottom fell out in his world. Kept it up, but it was really a dramatic impact on him stress-wise. And he couldn't function in the way he used to. And HCG was not cutting it. So we cycled him. We had him on HCG to recover for a couple of weeks to a month, depending on the particular protocol. At the time, it was a couple of weeks, just to see when he starts breaking through. And as soon as we caught the fact that he recovered, we were able to switch him to HCG. And the same model exists in women. There are women I've seen over the years who have gone into menopause. I remember one particular patient whose daughter was actually in school with my son in nursery school, and she was adopted, and she was looking for her biological parents, and they showed up within 2 weeks. She was able to find them. I guess they had been all on some list somewhere. They reunited, by the way, and they got married. She was just conceived very young. And her hair started turning white and her period stopped. And she went into menopause overnight. And she was quite young. She was only about 40. And within about a year, she started recovering. And she's not the only one. She's just the most dramatic one. So I have worked in the field of peptides for many years because in the growth and development in children with early puberty, you need to stop that. So I used Semirelin, for example, and gonadirelin at a much higher level in children to turn on puberty or turn it off. So I was very fortunate to have this very deep training in the reproductive system, be not quite like a fertility doctor who's also very well trained, beyond like in menopause and andropause. And I'm able to use a lot of the different peptides in that way because HCG is a peptide. It's a string of amino acids that's quite sympathetic to our own system. It looks like LH. It is a lot like LH.
Very nice. So kind of last question, and it's, I guess, kind of a big, potentially long question, but so you have a, you know, big clinic looking at your website, and you have all kind of, do all kind of things there. Peptides is one, and it looks like you even have an exercise physiologist and just, you know, have all these kind of parts. Walk us through, you know, I guess in a timely manner, but walk us through like a new patient that comes to see you. You know, what all do you do? What kind of testing? I mean, what could someone expect when they just, you know, come into your clinic as a new patient?
So first of all, they don't come in. So we start virtually, and that's been for years. So well before COVID, I was virtual. We did telemeds. We don't, not really Zooms, but phone calls. And once I determine that a person is a good fit for what we do, we actually start them right away. We prescribe a continuous glucose monitor that they put on themselves wherever they are in the country. And then we schedule them to get blood work. Sometimes it's at a Quest. Sometimes they can come into one of our centers, which is in New York. That's the headquarters where I am right now. But we also have a startup in Palo Alto, which I began during COVID in July 2020, and it's gone, you know, strong, and it's going to be full time beginning September. And we have an office in Miami Beach. And once we get all that material, we crunch it. We look at all the data. We ask people to fill out a questionnaire online. And then we walk them through about a month after the blood draw, we walk them through what the findings are. And we show them what we're connecting, how we're connecting the dots between their, how they're presenting now and how they feel, because some of them feel fantastic. They're triathletes. Others are pure couch potatoes and they had a scare, a wake-up call from themselves, like a doctor prescribes them as a pre-diabetic and tells them, you know, you better watch it, eat less, work out more, which is about the extent of it. Or a family member dies or a best friend, and it's a scary thing, you know, when you're in your 40s or 50s. And we explain what's going on and what we're going to be able to do to tackle it. And once that happens, they come in for either a morning or an afternoon, and we put them through performance testing. We have a couple of exercise physiologists. We're hiring another one. And they get tested for endurance to see how long, you know, how healthy their heart is. And that change alone, as we see it over time with more muscle, when you increase your exercise endurance, there's data in the literature, in the new first report in the New England Journal in about 2004 or five, and then again in Mayo Proceedings in thousands of people, independent of gender and cardiovascular status, cardiometabolic status, that you're increasing your VO2 by 3 points. You've extended the time that you're going to be no morbidity or mortality by 12% over a decade. So we do that routinely. So we're testing them for where they start in order to prove that there's a difference over time. Make sense?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's what we're doing.
Okay.
And then we set up a program for them subsequently to start intervening. Some people, it's largely lifestyle, but there's always supplements and there's some medication because we're all heading south. As sad as it sounds, we're not intended to live forever. Antibiotics made a big dent in that, as did, you know, better healthcare in some ways, but we're not that healthy underneath. And if we can find those variables and help course correct it, I believe, and I see it in my own center, that people can live a much longer life, reverse biological aging, and stay healthy, you know, for the rest of their life.
And so that was kind of my question. So you have, once you get these people well, hopefully turn them around. If they come to you and they're sick, you know, metabolically ill, whatever, you have some kind of maintenance program that you do with them. And
after that big deep dive into what I call my precision health analysis, then they enter a program. So if we decide that we can take care of them and they want to be our clients, they start working with us on a regular basis because it just gets better and better every year. There's lots of things that happen. So you have, like I told you the story about the guy who had huge stress factors of his business and he needed testosterone for a while because his life was kind of on hold and he couldn't function well. Mm-hmm. So it's not, just, I don't think of it as a maintenance program. I think of it as year to year, they get better and better. And so we're, as the process continues, because remember our decline happens over decades, you know, generally you go from the 20s to 30s and 40s and many individuals don't, particularly men, don't see doctors until something drastic happens. Mm-hmm. Just right. So that's really the goal.
Yeah.
I hope that wraps it up pretty well.
Yes. Very nice. Well, anything else before we kind of wrap it up that you want to just throw out there?
Recognize that there are challenges as we age with our health, but we can actually address them. We just need the knowledge to be turned into the wisdom and interventions that make sense. It's one of my goals with Grok, because what we do here at the center is not inexpensive, but Grok to me will be less expensive and be available in a way that will give information right at their fingertips for people. And that's what the app is going to do. And ultimately, that is what we hope will work for everybody, because we all deserve good health. But how do we get there with so much disease in the world? I think we doctors, which I think is your story, are overwhelmed. And it's very hard to help everybody. And you went out of your way to set up a podcast, but you still see patients. But because you recognize it's hard to reach everybody, mm-hmm. you know, specifically. Yeah. And that's what my hope is, that through Grok Health, we'll be able to reach everyone. Grok means understanding with compassion and intuition. And it's a real world word that comes out of the science fiction literature from Stranger in a Strange Land or Robert Heinlein, which I read as a child. And I love science fiction and love the word. So we're using it, but we're not using the K at the end. It's G-R-O-Q. We're using the Q at the end. G-R-O-Q Health.
Okay. And how do people find out about that? Is it Grok Health?
They can go online. Right now we're revising a lot of things. So it's a little bit of a, you know, initial startup website because we just wanted to put word out and do some testing. We have a wait list where it's word of mouth right now from the companies we take care of. They can they can bring in friends and family, but right now we're not really equipped to blow it out. Hopefully within the year we will be, or about a year from now, but it is going to be available. So it's quite exciting.
And then just your general website, if people just wanted to kind of learn more about you.
Grokhealth.com. GROQ health.com. Yeah. One
and
word.
And also, as far as your clinic, it looks like Comite, COMITEMD.com.
It is. Yes.
Learn more about
and
your
following
clinic
and
more
us
about
you, on, so. Yeah. And following us on Twitter and on, well, I guess, right. Twitter with an X now. And is it? No, it's, I'm sorry. Yes, it is. Right. It is.
Yeah,
I
think it's not even Twitter anymore. I think it's just X.
It's X. I know it transferred out on my phone automatically. It was so funny to see it. Instagram, it's at Comite Center. It's at Grok Health. And at actually Dr. Florence Comite, FLORENCE, Comite, COMITE. And all of those are getting ready to kind of be more activated by the last quarter of this year. We didn't want to be inundated because that would be hard. And failure is not an option to me. I've been working over 20 years to set this up. And so I want people to succeed. And that's my goal.
Very nice. Okay.
So grokhealth.com, comitemd.com. And the handles are at Comite Center, at Grok Health, Dr., abbreviated Dr., Florence Comite.
All right. Well, as we wrap up here, I always ask my guest if they could give us one health tip that would make us healthier today. What would you say to that?
Always start a meal or a snack with protein. That's the best way to handle sugar and insulin, and it causes you to have better balance. You won't gain as much weight, and you will hopefully feel better because you won't have these ups and downs in sugar and insulin that can really undermine the way you feel.
Yep. Okay. I love it. all right. Well, Dr. Florence Comite, I really appreciate your time and expertise, and really appreciate everyone listening. And I also want to, and I'll put it in the notes, but your book, Keep It Up. I assume
it's available on Amazon,
I
think
everything.
Even okay. Kindle. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's still going strong because I think I was 20 years too soon, but I was able to build up a platform with data, really scientific data, to prove the model. So I'm excited.
Perfect. Okay. All right. Well, thanks again, and appreciate everyone listening, and we will talk to you next time.
It was my pleasure too. It was fun.
Thank you.
Take care, Greg. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to FitRx. I invite you to share this with friends and family. If you would like, you can check out our website at vibrantlifedc.com, or you can email me at drgreg@vibrantlifedc.com.